Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Out of My Mind podcast. This is Keith Crosby, your host, and this is a podcast where we take a look at the crazy world around us through the lens of Scripture, that is to say, a biblical worldview, because we believe the Bible has something to say about every inch of thread that makes up the fabric of our existence. Today, I want to put a radical thesis on the table up front, and I want to warn you, it is radical indeed. Some of you are going to hear the first sentence and want to shut this thing off, but I encourage you to stay with me because I'm going to make my case slowly and carefully from the Scripture and from documented facts. And by the time we're done, I think at least some of you will find what sounds so radical at first actually sounds a lot like justice. So here it is. I believe that we should defund the Food and Drug Administration as it currently exists. I believe the federal government should nationalize the entire pharmaceutical industry in America. Now, I know that sounds crazy on the surface, but take a breath and stay with me. I'm not a socialist. I'm an avid capitalist with a capital C. But more importantly, I'm a Christian, so the Bible is my compass. And what I've watched the pharmaceutical industry do in this country and what I've experienced personally has convinced me that the current system is not broken. It's working exactly as it was designed to do, and I think that's the problem. So stay with me, because what I'm going to show you today is not just a political argument, but a biblical one. Let's call this section Act 1, which starts with my own personal story. As you know, I have a chronic and acute condition that requires treatment, lots of medication, and a while back, my doctor recommended this drug to me enthusiastically. In fact, when I read the email, I was stunned because it said this drug is the gold standard for my treatment. And I had never seen a doctor so enthusiastically use such incredible language. So I did what any reasonable person would do in the 21st century. I went to the pharmaceutical company's website, and there it was, almost word for word, the email that he sent me. He had done a cut and paste from the manufacturer's website, from their promotional materials. He had not written a clinical assessment tailored to my situation. He had reproduced a sales pitch with a medical degree attached to it. Now, I want to be fair to my doctor. He may not realize what he was doing, and this is actually the more frightening possibility. Doctors are busy. They only have a few minutes to spend with their patient, and the pharmaceutical industry had so thoroughly colonized the thinking of the medical profession by providing them shortcuts like this, helpful tools, promotional material that just sort of weaves itself into their day. And the line between the doctor's recommendation and pharma promotion has been erased in many cases, and neither he or I probably realized that. I made a decision about the medication, and I'll tell you more about this later, but the point was, I think, is that I was not told everything I needed to know, and there were consequences, and again, I'll leave the personal details till later. Yet, what happened to me on this small personal scale is what has happened to hundreds of thousands of Americans on a catastrophic national scale. And it has a name, and it has a name in a different part of the pharmaceutical industry. It's called dope sick, and it starts with a doctor's sales pitch in his office and a patient who trusts the doctor and the system. This brings me to what I would call Act 2, The Machine and How It Works. There's a mini-series on Hulu that I've been watching based on journalist Beth Macy's book by the same name. It's called Dope Sick, and I really commend it to you. It's on Hulu. It's 8 episodes, and it tells the story of how Purdue Pharmaceuticals flooded America with OxyContin, a high-dose, extended-release opioid painkiller way back in 1995. Initially, they targeted a very specific group of people, and that is the coal miners in Appalachia, and the coal miners and the nurses and the teenagers. Small-town doctors who trusted these people also were targeted, and here's how the machine worked. Purdue trained its sales representatives to tell doctors that the risk of addiction from OxyContin was less than 1%. They recruited more than 5,000 physicians, pharmacists, and nurses to all-expense-paid seminars held at various vacation destinations where they were trained for Purdue's National Speaker Bureau. In other words, doctors were paid to tell other doctors to prescribe the drug. Purdue later admitted in federal criminal proceedings that they paid doctors through speakers programs not to educate, but to induce prescriptions. Think about that admission. So they pay doctors to induce doctors, and it worked. Prescriptions for OxyContin for non-cancer-related pain went from roughly 670,000 in 1997 to 6.2 million in 2002, a nearly tenfold increase in 5 years. Now here's the connection I want you to make. What Purdue did to doctors with speaking fees and resort seminars, my doctor sort of did to me with a cut-and-paste recommendation, not realizing what he was doing. I have a very good doctor. The mechanism was different, but the result was the same. A patient received a pharmaceutical company's talking points dressed up as a doctor's medical judgment. Proverbs 11:1 tells us this, "A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. A scale that is less accurate has been rigged." And that's what God calls an abomination. Not a mistake, not an oversight, an abomination. When a doctor presents a pharmaceutical company's material, promotional material, that is, as his own recommendation, the balance is false. When a company tells Congress that OxyContin is not an epidemic while communities are being hollowed out, the balance is false. God takes note. Act 3, ask your doctor. And what happens if he says no? Now I want to talk about something most people just accept as part of modern life, and I want you to think about it differently. Turn on your television tonight, your streaming service, Hulu, Amazon Prime, whatever it is, and at some point, probably in the first hour, you will see a commercial for a prescription drug. A beautiful commercial, soft music, people smiling on beaches, a golden retriever, someone riding a bicycle through autumn leaves, laughing. And at the end of the commercial, you'll hear these words, ask your doctor. Here is what I want you to sit with. There used to be a time in America when a commercial was not allowed for pharmaceutical companies. It wasn't just unusual. It wasn't just an irritant. It wasn't just frowned upon. A pharmaceutical commercial was not allowed. For most of the 20th century, pharmaceutical companies marketed their drugs directly to doctors, not to patients. The FDA's regulations, going back to the 1960s, required that any drug advertisement include a full summary of all side effects, contraindications, and risks. That requirement made television commercials essentially impossible. You cannot fit a page of fine print into a 30-second spot. In 1983, a company called Boots Pharmaceuticals tried to air their very first prescription drug commercial on television. The FDA ordered them to pull it within 48 hours. The commissioner of the FDA called for a voluntary moratorium on all prescription drug advertising. That was 1983. And the moratorium held until August of 1997, when the FDA quietly changed its rules. Under the new guidelines, drug companies no longer had to include the full summary of risks in a broadcast ad. They could quickly list the major side effects, point the viewers to a website or an 800 number, and they were done. The floodgates opened immediately. Spending on direct-to-consumer advertising exploded from $360 million in 1995 to $1.3 billion, billion with a B, just 3 years later. Today, pharmaceutical companies spend more than $6 billion a year on advertising aimed directly at patients. They're not advertising to doctors, they're advertising to patients, to you. And notice this, the FDA official who wrote that rule change inside the agency was Dr. Michael Friedman. In 1998, 1 year after opening the door to pharmaceutical advertising, Dr. Friedman left the FDA and became a senior vice president at a pharmaceutical company. The watchman opened the gate and then walked through it. I'll come back to that pattern. But here is what I want you to understand about those commercials. They are not public health announcements. They are not information. They are sales calls to you in your living room. Their entire purpose is to make you walk through into your doctor's office and say the words a pharmaceutical company wrote for you. I saw this on television. Can I try it? And think about the subtle pressure embedded in the phrase, ask your doctor. Think about what that implies if your doctor says no. You saw the smiling people on the beach. You saw the golden retriever. You saw people getting their lives back. And what if your doctor says no? Studies confirm what you'd expect. A patient's request for a specific medication dramatically increases the rate at which physicians prescribe the drug. even if it may not be the best clinical choice. Think about that. You're being used to bypass your doctor's judgment. The ad goes from the television to your living room to your mouth to your doctor's prescription pad. The pharmaceutical company never had to convince your doctor. They convinced you to convince your doctor. And here's the context that should make this harder. The United States is only one of two countries in the entire world. Let me say that again. The United States is one of two countries in the entire world that allows pharmaceutical companies to advertise prescription drugs directly to consumers on television. The other is New Zealand. Every other industrialized nation on earth has said no. Canada has said no. The United Kingdom says no. Germany, France, Japan, Australia, they all say no. They decided that the doctor-patient relationship is too important to be colonized by advertising. The U.S. has decided otherwise, and we're paying for it. Isaiah 5:20 says this, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Marketing a drug as liberation when it might be a trap, that is calling darkness light, and God attaches a woe to it." Let's go to Act 4. We'll call this the revolving door. Now, I want to show you how the architecture of the problem affects us. Because what I've described so far, the compromised doctors, the manipulative commercials, and the captured patients, none of it would be possible without the institution that is to prevent it all, and that is the FDA. The FDA is the proverbial watchman on the wall, or should be. Their job is to stand between the pharmaceutical industry and the American public and make sure that what gets approved is safe and effective. That's their job description. Now, let me tell you what's been happening. A comprehensive study published in the Journal of Health Affairs examined Health and Human Services appointees, including FDA and CDC officials, between 2004 and 2020. Now listen to this. 38% of FDA appointees who left the agency went to work directly in the private pharmaceutical industry. At the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, the number was 54%, more than half. The same people who spent their careers supposedly regulating pharmaceutical products ended up on the pharmaceutical industry payroll. A separate study tracked 55% of FDA reviewers in the hematology and oncology division over 9 years. Of those who left the agency, 57% went to work for or to consult with the biopharmaceutical industry. A separate analysis found that 9 out of 10 FDA commissioners between 2006 and 2019 went to work for the pharmaceutical companies after leaving the government. 9 out of 10. The person whose signature appears on drug approvals, the most powerful regulatory position in American medicine, went to work for the pharmaceutical industry 9 out of 10 times. The watchman joined the very army he was supposed to be watching for. A researcher at Oregon Health and Science University who studied this said it plainly, when your number one major employer after you leave your job is sitting across the table from you, you're not going to be as hard on them when you regulate. Of course not. You're not supposed to. No one is if they want a job with them, right? And here is the detail that should stop you cold. Right now, today, as many as 600 FDA drug reviewers have formally recused themselves from active drug approval of processes because they are simultaneously interviewing with pharmaceutical companies. 600 people. These are currently employed to protect you. They are currently auditioning for the side you need protection from. A Stanford Law Review article put it this way, "Nothing corrodes public trust in a regulatory agency faster than the sense that its senior officials are auditioning for future jobs at the very companies they regulate." Let that sink in. Auditioning. The watchman is auditioning for the enemy while he is still on the wall. Ezekiel 33:6 says this, "But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, so that the people are warned, and the sword comes and takes away any of them, that person is taken away in his iniquity, and his blood I will require at the watchman's hand." John 10:12-13 says this, "The hired hand sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches and scatters them, he flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. The FDA, as currently structured, is institutionally incapable of serving as a true watchman. The incentive structures will not allow it. No ethics training, no cooling off period, no new commissioner can fix this structural problem. You cannot reform a false balance into a just one by adjusting the weights slightly. You just can't tweak it. You have to get a new scale. This brings us to what I call Act 5. COVID and the admission you'd like to forget, or they'd like you to forget. Some of you may be thinking, well, that's history. OxyContin was in the 1990s. Surely we've learned. Let me talk about the COVID-19 hysteria. During the pandemic, we were told very clearly and repeatedly by the CDC, by government officials, and by the media that getting vaccinated would prevent you from getting COVID and would prevent you from spreading it to others. Get vaccinated for others was the message. Vaccine mandates were implemented. People lost jobs, careers, and relationships, all built on the premise that the vaccine would stop transmission. In October of 2022, a Pfizer executive named Janine Small appeared before the European Parliament's COVID committee. A Dutch member of the parliament asked her directly, was Pfizer's COVID vaccine tested on stopping transmission of the virus before it entered the market? Her answer, no. Now, in fairness, fact-checkers were quick to note that Pfizer never formally claimed that in their clinical trial documents that transmission had been studied. The trial was designed to measure symptomatic disease, not spread. That's technically true. But here's the question that matters. While the clinical trials were silent on transmission, were government health officials silent? Absolutely not. The message was everywhere. Mandates were justified on the idea, on the grounds of stopping spread. And Pfizer's own CEO tweeted in April of 2021 that the vaccine was 100% effective in preventing COVID cases, a claim made with, by the company's own subsequent acknowledgement, no data to support it. Because the data didn't exist. The study had never been done. Whether you call that a lie or an assumption made under pressure, as the Pfizer executive later put it, moving at the speed of science, the result of millions of people was the same. They made life-altering decisions based on claims that were not established by evidence. And I know what that feels like because I've experienced it with my recent doctor visit. And the mechanism was different, but the moral structure was identical. Information was shaped by the interests other than your health. And you were not told what you needed to know. Proverbs 14:15 says this, "The simple believes everything, but the prudent gives thought to his steps." The answer is not refusing all medicine. The answer is demanding full truth before you act. And the answer is building a system that makes full truth legally, structurally, and morally required, not optional. This brings us to Act 6, the goring ox, knowledge and blood guilt. Exodus 21, verse 28. When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be liable. Accidents happen. No liability. Verse 29, but if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has been warned but has not kept it in, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. The line God draws is knowledge. If you knew, if you were warned, if evidence existed that your product was dangerous and you did nothing, you bear blood guilt. Purdue Pharma's own laboratory test in 1995 showed that 68% of the oxycodone could be extracted from OxyContin tablets when crushed. This means that their claims about it being unlikely to be addictive were false. They knew. The ox had gored before they opened the gate, and the FDA employee who signed off on OxyContin approval in 1995, a man named Curtis Wright, subsequently left the FDA and went to work for Purdue Pharma. The watchman approved the ox, then he went to work for the man who owned it. Over 800,000 Americans died from opioid overdoses since 1999. An estimated 187 will die today. That's more than 7 every hour. The ox was known to gore, and God says, I require blood. Act 7. Restitution and why they paid what they paid is not enough. They were eventually held accountable, and they paid a fine. Their fine is said to be between $4.5 billion and $7 billion. They originally offered to pay $10 million. Exodus 22 verse 1 says, if a man steals an ox or a sheep, he will repay fivefold oxen for an ox and fourfold sheep for a sheep. Biblical restitution is not a fine price you put into the cost of doing business. It exceeds the crime fourfold, fivefold. It is designed to make wrongdoing categorically unprofitable. Purdue paid very little money relative to what they did. They started out paying $634 million in 2007, and the total settlement eventually reached $8.3 billion. The Sackler family, who personally extracted $10.7 billion from the company between 2008 and 2018, retained most of their wealth. The individual victims received payouts ranging from $8,000 to $16,000. Many of them could not collect because they didn't have proof of their prescriptions handy after all these years. The federal judge said it plainly. She had sent dealers to prison for selling OxyContin on the street, and the people who started the epidemic would not serve a sentence. That is not biblical restitution. That is the powerful buying their way to freedom while the grieving hold $8,000 checks, if they're quote-unquote lucky. Amos 5:12, I know how many are your transgressions and how great are your sins, you who afflict the righteous, who take a bribe and turn aside the needy at the gate. The gate was the ancient courthouse in those days. When the courthouse protects the wealthy and leaves the victims a fraction of justice, God says, I know, and I am counting. Act 8, my radical thesis. So here's where I land. The FDA is currently structured so that it cannot function as an independent watchman. In one way or another, its employees are largely on the take. 9 out of 10 commissioners going to pharma. That's a pretty high number. 54% of CDC appointees ending up in the industry. 600 active reviewers simultaneously reviewing drugs their companies regulate. That is not a coincidence. This is a system. But we need them for what? And the pharmaceutical industry cannot be trusted to self-regulate because every structural incentive points to profit. Billions in advertising. Doctors compromise with speaking fees and resort seminars. Patients manipulated by commercials designed to make them ask for something they saw between segments on the evening news. Regulators who are sitting across the table from their future employee. My thesis is this. The FDA must be rebuilt from the ground up with a non-negotiable structural requirement. No FDA employee can go to work for a pharmaceutical company, regardless of what level, from entry level to the highest levels. The revolving door must be welded shut, not slowed, not cooled off, shut permanently. And because the pharmaceutical products are not optional luxuries, but matters of life and death, because the power to approve or deny a drug is the power over human lives, the industry itself should be brought under public ownership and public accountability. We do not allow private companies to build our nuclear weapons and manage them. We do not allow private companies to run our courts. Some things are too consequential to be operated for profit. Profit cannot be their governing motive. Pharmaceuticals fall into that category. 800,000 dead Americans say so. Ezekiel 34:10, God to the shepherds who fed themselves on the flock. I will require my flock at their hand and put a stop to their feeding on the flock. The shepherds shall no longer feed themselves. Well, that's my thesis. The shepherds who feed themselves on the flock, the victims, the patients, must be stopped. And the flock must have shepherds whose only interest is the health of the sheep. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, and in conclusion, as they say, and if you've been touched by the opioid crisis, if you've lost someone, if you're in the middle of it losing someone, if you're made a medical decision based on information that turned out to be incomplete or false, hear this. The Bible is not silent about your pain. God is not indifferent. The same God who wrote the liability laws of Exodus is the same God who sent his son to bear the consequences of every false balance, every uncovered pit, every watchman who didn't blow the trumpet. The ox was known to gore. The pit was left uncovered. The balance was false. The commercials told you to ask your doctor. The regulator was already auditioning for his next job. And the watchman didn't blow the trumpet. God says, I will require blood. God, not man. This is not a call to violence. This is a call to prayer. This is not a tidy ending, but it's a true one. Well, I think I've said enough for today. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, email me at keithcrosby@yahoo.com. keithcrosby@yahoo.com. That's keithcrosby@yahoo.com. If you like this podcast, please share it. Then sign on to whatever platform you use and give us a 5-star rating and leave a good comment. That will help us grow the podcast. In the meantime, this is Keith Crosby signing off for the Out of My Mind podcast. May God bless you and God keep you.